The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Iran and Russia are also brought together by pressure from the West. So there is a sort of anti-sanctions coalition coming together in Asia between Iran, China, and Russia. This isn't really much of an alliance. All of these countries have their own problems with each other. So it's somewhat of an uneasy relationship, like the trade relationship between Iran and Russia might skyrocket now, but it's virtually nothing at this point. But the relationship between the two countries is very much one-dimensional. And in order for that relationship to grow, you need sanctions relief.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it looks like the Iran deal is falling through. We'll talk about that another day. I want to talk to Vine Mercy today. You know, this is such a love for me. I love this devotion. It has transformed my walk with the Lord. It has allowed me to rid myself of fear and anxiety, right? And just totally trust the Lord in all circumstances, whether, you know, there are violent storms raging in life or whether it's the, you know, everyday walk with him. Divine mercy will transform your life. Trust, especially, is the key. And the Lord's given us gifts. The image of divine mercy, I've talked about so many promises, so much protection. The Feast of Divine Mercy, that's the day that I hope the Lord calls me home. What a special day that is with the grace that's offered. But he gave us this prayer known as the Chapel of Divine Mercy. And we talked about how important it is for the sick and dying. The Lord says the salvation of certain souls depends on it, that he promised to come not as a just judge, but as a merciful Savior. Faustina would pray it for everyone, from the dying to warding off storms, as I shared. And we prayed every day together. And there's so many answered prayers that come into the studio here. And if you haven't written to me yet, please do that. It's drew@relevantradio.com. Send me that answered prayer, drew@relevantradio.com. Mark answered prayer and testify. Give God thanks. All right, I'd love to hear that. Here's one of my favorites. This is coming. I've probably shared this before, but I want to share this. This is the power of this prayer. And then I'll take a few more of your calls. This person writes to me, Drew, I want to share some miracles I attribute to divine mercy. I had a colleague at work, let's call him Joe, he says, whose grandson was diagnosed with a brain tumor the size of a tennis ball. We prayed the Divine Mercy Chaplet for him and for successful surgery, or if it was God's will, for a miracle. The surgery was scheduled for a week later, on Friday. So Joe went up on Wednesday prior to the scheduled surgery. And the doctor ordered another set of scans. He had to do a CAT scan on Thursday to plan the surgical procedure, and they saw the tumor was still there, tennis ball-sized tumor. Early Friday morning, the doctor did one final scan prior to surgery. We had been praying the Chaplet of Divine Mercy nonstop. To the doctor's total amazement, the tumor was gone. It had disappeared. The tumor, the size of a tennis ball, had disappeared. How does that happen in just a couple hours, right? Thursday, they have the scan. They do another one a couple hours later. Boom, it's gone. The doctors couldn't explain what happened. The surgery was canceled. The person writes, that was over a decade ago, and Joe's grandson is doing great. So that's the way God can work. I mean, don't limit him, all right? Do not limit God. Don't put him in a box. Don't say, oh, the tumor's too big. It's there. It's on the scan. You know, the doctor says this is a death sentence. I only have 6 months to live. You know, we go through all these things if it is God's will. And maybe the Lord is asking you to step out of that boat and walk on that water. Maybe he's asking for greater trust. Maybe it's a learning experience. Maybe it's a pruning opportunity for you so you can blossom even greater. Walk with the Lord. Trust the Lord. Whatever his will is, it's ultimately best for you. And pray big. Pray for those giant miracles like the disappearance of a tumor. I love those. They help my faith. They do, because you know that when you have financial problems, the numbers don't add up, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to pay the mortgage? How am I going to pay the tuition? How am I going to pay the carpet? You know, how are you going to pay whatever? God can work that miracle for you. The doctor gives you that bad diagnosis. Yeah, he's a doctor. God's the divine physician. He can change all sorts of things, no matter what the circumstance is, no matter what the problem, no matter how hard the heart is of your ex-spouse, things can change, and they do. Because prayer changes things. Karen in Oregon, thank you for calling. Thanks for sharing with us today as well. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew, and thank you for taking my call today. I went through a period last year for a 2 or 3 week period at the end of the year there where I couldn't sleep. And I would wake up almost every hour, every hour, every hour. And so what I would do is I would pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet every time I woke up. So I did this. Anyway, a brother who had fallen away from everybody, church, God, everything, unbeknownst to me, was in a lot of pain and committed suicide during that period. And when I found out, which I didn't find out right away, but when I did find out, I thought, wow, whenever I pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, I always pray it for anyone that dies today. I always pray for, you know, everyone, and I mentioned some of my relatives, but it's always, always anyone who dies today. And I know that when my brother took his life, he did commit suicide right before January 1st.
Wow.
That Divine Mercy Chaplet was being prayed for him during the hour of his actual death.
Yeah. First of all, I'm sorry for your loss, but what a beautiful testament. What a beautiful act of charity on your part. You know, 105 people die every minute. That's almost two people a second. And the Lord says, pray as much as you can for those. You know, Father Chris Alar, who's been a friend of the show, he went through something similar. I think it was his mother or his grandmother, I think, committed suicide, one or the other. And he often said, because this prayer was such a consolation for him after her death, and he often says, you know, this is a prayer for that son of yours, for anyone who died in tragedy or accident. I have a friend who's a son. Battled depression. He went through really dark moments, and he actually threw himself in front of a subway in Philadelphia and lost his life that way. And you know, committed suicide. Sorry. But you know, God is so merciful. That's the thing. It's the beauty of our faith, isn't he? He's so merciful. And
exactly.
The fact, you were waking up and praying, that was the Holy Spirit at work. So, you know, I have no doubt in my mind about it. No doubt about it. And I'm grateful for your call, because I think you give a lot of other people hope too. You know, the Lord talked about, you know, sooner would heaven and earth turn into nothing than my mercy not embrace a trusting soul. And when you are there praying for that loved one of yours, you know, look, the Lord hears these prayers, and he loves your child more than you ever could. And the Lord told Faustina in her diary that even a soul, if it's steeped in darkness, not to despair, because all is not yet lost. That he says in his diary entry 1486, which I love, he says, you know, this, he'll come to that soul. He will come to that soul. He says, Jesus calls, Faustina wrote this, these aren't my words. Jesus calls to a soul, you know, multiple times. He says he calls to a soul a third time, but if the soul remains deaf to the first, to the second, and the third, well, then, and that soul's despairing, well, then, okay. He'll honor God, you know, their will. But he says, God's mercy can exert itself on that soul. You know, God can grant that soul the grace of a final conversion, you know? And I think that happens so often. I forget what the saint it was that talked about the man who wanted to commit suicide, and I think he was jumping off a bridge, and as he was plummeting to his death, he realized this, he cried out to God for mercy. And this saint revealed to everyone that that person was saved. That's how God's grace works. God's outside of time. He's the author of it. He can suspend it. We don't know what happens between this side of life and the next, and clearly God wants to save those that we love. And he said to St. Faustine, he says, although a person is at the point of death, God gives a soul an interior vivid moment so that if the soul is willing, it has the possibility of returning to God. That's how good God is. He is love and mercy itself. It's his greatest attribute. Through all eternity, we'll try to contemplate this and never be able to fathom it. He says, no angel and no human will ever, throughout all eternity, be able to fathom the depths of God's mercy. It's one of the great mysteries of the next life. Catherine in Minnesota, thank you for waiting. You are on the air too. Good afternoon.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, Drew.
You're welcome.
I just want to share that a beautiful blessing from the Divine Mercy. My husband of 25 years We're Baptist, and we got married. And since day one, he's gone to the Catholic Church with me, raised our kids in the Catholic Church, and he has now finally decided to convert. And a year ago, we were in Europe and traveled Germany for about a month. And almost every church we went into, we said the Divine Mercy, and we started saying it after we read your book. And he said, it's a kind of a neutral prayer, you know, and he was willing to say it with me. And I just see the blessings in that.
Oh, well, I cannot tell you how happy I am. I am so happy for you. What a blessing for the two of you. What a grace. You know, the Lord told St. Faustina, too, that that's the one. I'm sure you were praying for him all along. You know, I'm sure you were. So this is the prayer to pray. I believe that. Look, I've got loved ones that aren't where they need to be, and I'm praying for their conversion, too. And this is the prayer that I default to. I mean, the rosary is the other one. I have the rosary in one hand, the chaplet in the other. But I think God's heart is so moved by this prayer. And he told St. Faustina, you know, regarding conversion, he says, this is the one prayer that is always heard and answered. It is always heard and answered. And he says, you console me when you pray this. You know, the prayer most pleasing to me is the prayer for the conversion of sinners. Know, my daughter, that this prayer is always heard and answered. What a beautiful testimony. Catherine, thank you. I'm so grateful. And this goes to anyone who's listening. You got a wayward son, daughter, spouse, sibling, friend? Start praying the chaplet for them, all right? And trust them to God's mercy. You'll be surprised at how things change. Lenore is listening in Glendale, California. Lenore, thank you for calling in. Good afternoon.
Thank you so much. I love your show, and I love your book.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I started praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet per your book, and within a day or two, we found just three dozen roses appeared from nowhere on our side lawn. They were all red, except one was white. Wow. We have no idea where they came from. And the next day, a relative who had been very upset with us and not speaking to us called and apologized for her behavior, and I apologized to her, and it was just a big crying, wonderful love fest.
How beautiful.
And then my cat, who had been very, very sick, that we didn't know if he was going to live, he got well kind of miraculously. He'd been sick for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to thank you so much.
Well, Lenore, thank you. Thank you for letting me know. I don't get a whole lot of feedback. I know people have read the book, and I get a lot of positive feedback on how much they've enjoyed it. But your call and our last call there really moved me the most, because as a result of the book, people are now beginning to pray this prayer, the chaplet, which I love. I mean, I love it. And I've seen the fruit of it. And if you're not praying the chaplet, maybe you're tuning in, maybe you're new to this conversation, you can go back and listen to this show every afternoon at 3 Central. That's 1 Pacific, 4 Eastern. We pray the prayer on the air. And the testimonies and the miracles that come in are legion. I mean, they're off the charts. And it's nothing I'm doing. It's the fact that God, in his great mercy, is so moved by this prayer that he honors the united prayer of all of his children. And we're going to continue to see more of this. I only have a few more minutes. I'll grab a couple calls before I've got to take a break. But Shannon's in Crown Point, Indiana. Sharon, good afternoon, Sharon. Thanks for calling. Sharon, I hate to say this, but I can't hear you. Sharon, I'll tell you, I'll come right back to you. Your signal right now is a little garbled. Maybe my call screener can do a quick check. So we'll jump back to you. Stay there, okay? Evie in California, good afternoon. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call, Drew. I just want to say a couple of positives. Although my husband was diagnosed with cancer 2 years ago, that was the same time I ran across Relevant Radio on the internet and on the radio. And then he knew the futility of the cancer, but he happened to die Divine Mercy Sunday of last year.
Oh, and I thought that was awesome.
Yes, I know. And I remember you saying something about that, like your dog paddling your way to heaven. I'm going to steal that song. That. I love that. But yeah, so although it was traumatically horrible, he took his last breath in front of me. And I kept saying, wow, it's Divine Mercy Sunday.
Yeah, we were there
all day praying. So that was a good thing. And the other thing, St. Faustina has a relic here in Merced in our little tiny town. I couldn't believe my sister showed it to me about 5 years ago.
That's awesome.
And she got me a diary and everything, and so it just is remarkable that in this town we have a relic to St. Faustina.
I love it. There are a few around the country. I know that. I have one. There's one at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help and a few other places.
Yeah.
But, first of all, I just want to say, thank you for calling in, and my condolences to you for losing your husband, but I would be so comforted by the fact that, I often say, I want to go on Divine Mercy Sunday. There's any day of the year. Wouldn't be on Good Friday, wouldn't be on Resurrection Sunday. Divine Mercy Sunday is the last day. It's the last day of the octave of Easter. So it's on that day that the Lord told St. Faustina, the floodgates of his mercy are open. And I really believe on that day, unbelievable miracles take place. I mean, there's not another day like it. There's a great divine mercy promise that's associated with forgiveness for the temporal punishment due to your sin. I won't go into all of it now because I don't have time. But on that day, I think God is just so loving and embracing. And, man, there's not a better day on the calendar to have your loved one called home. So my condolences to you. But I would rejoice knowing that your husband is more than likely in the loving embrace of our Savior. Sharon in Crown Point, let me jump back to you. I'm sorry about that. We had a bad connection before. It's good to have you back. Well,
thank you. Thank you for your help. I want to share with a story that a friend of mine's husband was sent home to die after being in the hospital for quite a while, like a couple months. And they had the hospital bed in the front room. And Don was very restless. And they couldn't give him sedatives because it made him combative. And his wife and the nurse left to go talk, in the kitchen to try to figure out what they could give him because he was just threshing around the bed. And it was really painful to see him so disturbed and so upset. And his brother and his wife were there, and it was 3:00, and something just like the Holy Spirit just kind of pushed us up. And we went around his bed and stood around his bed, and we grabbed hands and started praying the Chapel of Divine Mercy.
Oh.
And by the time we were done, he was totally at peace. And he stayed at peace until 10:30 that night when he died. And the nurse and his wife came in and couldn't figure out, what did you do? What happened? Because nothing they could give him was settling him down. So I think this is an example of what St. Faustina said would happen and what Jesus said would happen. And I want to give thanks to God. Thank you for giving me a chance to share that story.
I am so happy you pray that you shared that. And again, that's just what happened to St. Faustina. She went to the bedside of a dying man who was in agony, who was writhing, and she saw demons around his bed, and he was being tormented. He's in his final hour. And she began to pray the chaplet, and those demons were hissing as they left. They were forced to flee. And like your loved one, the soul of the man became very peaceful and very calm. And he went on to our loving Savior, and Faustina wrote about it in her diary. She says, the hour of death, this is what the Lord said. He says, I will defend as my own glory every soul that will pray the chaplet. I'll defend as my own glory. When others say it for the dying person, the pardon's the same. The Lord said, God's anger is placated, and unfathomable mercy will envelop the soul. For the very depths of my tender mercy are moved for this prayer. And that's what happens. I think God's grace fills the soul in the end. And it's a prayer for the sick and the dying. It's a prayer for you today. It's a prayer for those miracles you're seeking. It's a prayer just to tell God how much you love him. Like, I got to leave it right there. I know the lines are stacked. I'd love to hear your stories. Do me a favor. Write to me. Send me your answered prayers. Drew@relevantradio.com. Just mark answered prayer. Tell me your story. I'd love to share more of them, and we'll have to do that again. But I am right up against the clock now. I'm just so grateful for everyone who called. I'm grateful for everyone who's been waiting here as well. And above all, I'm grateful for God's mercy today. It's the anniversary of the feast, the anniversary of the day that the Lord revealed to St. Faustina the Chapel of Divine Mercy. Pray it. And if you are not familiar with it, I think you'll find all that info at our website as well as or on our mobile app. I'll take a short pause. We'll change gears when I come back.
The Drew Mariani Show. Connected. Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio line, is hiring today with several positions throughout the U.S. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with COF, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
The numbers here are staggering. CNS News reports that Americans spent more on taxes in 2021 than on food, clothing, and healthcare combined. $16,729 per consumer in total taxes between state, local, fed, sales tax, etc. So people spent on average over almost $17,000 in taxes. But they only spent $15,500 roughly on food, clothing, and healthcare. It is more expensive for people to pay taxes to the feds in particular, who are wasting their money. More than half, it looks here, of the total taxation that was represented was to the federal government. People are paying more in taxes than they are to live.
You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that is, that is stunning. Absolutely stunning. Americans spending more in taxes than clothing. What's going on here? You know, what's this bode for the future? You know, you heard a little bit earlier today that the new inflation numbers came out, and they weren't good. Overall, inflation was at 8.3% over last year, and experts, you know, they were predicting it would probably come a little lower. They think maybe 8.1%. Gas prices were heading down. That decline wasn't enough to lower the average with all the other increased costs, especially food. And overall, food is up over 11.5%, which is the highest jump since May of 1979. I mean, think about how old you were in 1979, right? Think about where we are today. What happened? What happened that we're seeing this type of inflation? Grocery prices were even higher. They were 13.5%. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, we got, you know, bread and chicken and milk. They're all up more than 16%. And that's why we're seeing something happen in the culture. Maybe you've witnessed this as well. I'd love to get your take on it. We're seeing people using the buy now, pay later services. You ever see those? There are companies like, I don't know, Zip or Klarna, where you can get the item you want, right? But you have to pay them in four equal payments. And according to the Washington Examiner, you know, Zip saw 95% growth in U.S. grocery purchases, while Karma reported more than half of the top 100 items bought with its services are groceries. Groceries. 100 of the items bought with, you know, its services were groceries. It's nothing to chuckle about. It's actually quite amazing to me. I'm actually quite stunned. The fact that people have got to buy food on time, right? There's no interest. We've got these apps that are out there where they're easy to use, even with bad credit, and they're supposedly no interest apps. But, you know, you're more than likely to be approved because, you know, of the no interest option. But it's easy to rack up debt. That's what happens here. You know, the New York Times profiled one man who was, I think, $1,000 in debt with Klarna, including $100 in late fees, and that was all on food. And he managed to pay it all off. He got rid of the app on his phone, and it was a painful lesson for him. And debt is a tough thing. You might be in it right now. I'm sure these numbers are probably resonating with you. Maybe it's your kids. Maybe it's somebody you love. Given the fact that you're paying on average more than $400 a month more than you were paying a year ago for the same things that you're now buying, it's easy to see why. You know, why you'd be going to debt to buy food. I mean, it's almost $5,000 more if you think about it over the course of the year. And again, it's not just food. I'm struck by the food aspect here, just because I'm thinking, gosh, I know food costs have gone up, but, you know, to go into debt for that. Taxes. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that the American consumer spent an average of more than $15,000 on food, on clothing, on healthcare combined last year, while paying an average of $17,000 in taxes to the federal, state, and local government. So you spent more in taxes than you did on food. So again, I go back to my question. What's going on? How did we get here? Is this temporary? How will things change? I'm joined right now by Rachel Gressler. She is a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation's Grover M. Herman Center for the federal budget, and she joins us today. Rachel, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Drew.
I am delighted. You know, the president claimed today that we are heading, I guess, in the right direction on inflation. And I almost feel like I'm being gaslighted sometimes when I listen to the president talk about how national debt's being paid down and ultimately how great the economy is. When I look back and we're looking at 1970 numbers, you know, I'm thinking, I don't know, based on the numbers I'm reading from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and others. There's still more to do, I think. And he celebrated the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, which I think is a misnomer. How much, and here's my, this is what I really want an answer to, is how much is government spending influencing inflation? Are we spending way too much money? Is that what's driven this up? What's different under his administration than what we saw, let's say, 4 years ago or in the past decade or two?
Well, absolutely. The federal government is spending far too much money. It was spending too much money before the pandemic. And the statistics that you saw there about how much we're paying in taxes, and that's only covering a portion of that spending. But there was another report out today from the Committee for the Responsible Federal Budget, and it found that the Biden administration is responsible for $4.8 trillion in new spending since it took office. And it took office after the big CARES Act was passed. You know, all the major pandemic programs came in 2020. They took office when the vaccines were in place and people were beginning to learn how to live with COVID. And it's this massive spending that is inflating prices. You know, the average person, yeah, their wages have gone up, but inflation has acted like a $5,000 tax over the last year, meaning that the average worker actually has $3,000 less money in their paycheck that they can actually spend on things. And this is absolutely coming from too much government spending.
My guest today, Rachel Gresler, if you want to join us, the number here is 888-914-9149. Taking a look at inflation and what it's costing you, more people on credit. Let's talk about credit, Rachel. Credit cards, they've been used to buy groceries now. You know, people have been doing it for 15, 20 years. I'll sometimes use my credit card, but then you pay it, right? Yet I think people are having mounting credit card debts because they're saying, well, there's not enough in my paycheck now at the end of the month, and I still need the food. I'll pay this off with my next check, and then that doesn't happen. So when people first started using credit cards, when that first tapped in, it was primarily people who were low on cash, you know, who had to use them to buy food. Now it's commonplace. I can't imagine how many people listening to me right now are saying, you know what? I put all my groceries on my credit card. Now, some people get money back for it. There's a lot of different reasons for it. But are these new services, you know, that are being lobbied to people where you can buy groceries and pay later, are they different than using a credit card? And where are we in terms of credit card consumption and debt?
These new services are different. In large part, it's that they don't go through the normal background check, so virtually anybody can qualify to get the credit. There are some additional kind of checks in place in terms of the limits of how much you can borrow and not pay back before they'll cut you off. So it's kind of an alternative to the credit card, but the fear is that it's people who have maxed out their credit cards who are now turning to another one that are just racking up this additional layer of debt. And we have seen over a 6% increase in consumer credit card debt over the past year. And that's in contrast to debt actually declining in 2020 because the combination of people not being able to spend as much and then three rounds of government stimulus checks, you know, the massive unemployment insurance money that was going out there, as people saved up a lot. They also got used to having more money and being able to spend more money. But that was kind of like fake money. You know, it was money that the government was spending now, but we've got to claw it back at some point. And we're not even clawing it back yet. And people are already feeling the pain. You know, the inflation tax of over $5,000 the past year is more than those three rounds of stimulus payments. And so it's kind of wiped away, you know, what people perceived as a positive effect of those. And we're seeing the real consequences.
That's so true. And of course, you know, inflation is biting into the value of the dollar. A dollar's not going, you know, anywhere where it used to. So, you know, what does the average, I don't know, worker's pay look like now with inflation compared to last year? How's the weaker dollar, if you will? How's inflation affecting all that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, wages, if you just look at the dollar amount that you're making, they're up about $7,000 a year. So that sounds great on the surface level. But when you, or actually, I'm sorry, it's $3,300 a year. But then there's a $5,100 inflation tax. It means they're about $3,000 poorer. So real wages on net are down significantly. thousands of dollars less. And I think that's getting to the point where when you have a multi-$1,000 pay cut, that's why people are having to pay for their everyday living expenses, just things like food, with these buy now, pay later apps. It's one thing to put a big purchase that you've planned for on credit and know that you'll be able to pay it off over the long term, but these are everyday purchases that are just going to continue to rack up over time.
Right. You know, I was shopping on Amazon for something. I needed it like in 2 days or whatever it was. So I had gone on there and I had forgot that I had put some stuff. I guess I was looking for whatever the item was, one or two items, and I saved it for later. I don't know if you ever shopped on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to save a couple of your items, and when you want it, you can bring them out of the save for later and put them back into your cart, I guess. I went back to buy this product. I looked down and see what I had saved down there, and I have this message next to a couple of the items. This item has had a price change, and I look at it. One of the items went up by like $10. You know, I mean, all of the items, all three of the items that I had in that save box all increased in terms of their cost. And I'm assuming the distributor or the manufacturer or whoever it was must have to pay more now, and they're passing those costs along to consumers. We know we have still supply chain issues, and transportation costs are high, and diesel is through the roof. It's wild out there. So you're seeing it in grocery stores. You're seeing it in your box stores. You're seeing it online. Are we headed into a recession? I know some people are worried about that because of this inflation. And, you know, we know how the Fed is trying to stem that off, but man, they got to walk a tightrope in order to avoid that. How do you see things playing out? Do you think a recession is likely?
I think it is likely. We already have two quarters of negative GDP growth, which is the typical measure of a recession. We've never had that historically and not had a recession come. I think the big fear is what type of a recession will that be? And will it be a stagflationary recession, which is where you have high inflation and declining GDP growth and increasing unemployment? And I think the labor market is kind of the wild card here, because we still have millions of job openings, nearly two jobs available for every worker who's looking for one. But again, that is an artificially created labor market by the fact that the government was paying people more to not work than they could have gotten by working for a long period of time. And I think some of that was so long, you know, 18 months, that it established habits that have, you know, led to a decline in the culture of work and people's willingness to do that. And that's actually cycling into the inflation, because when employers have to pay people more to do the exact same job that they paid them a year ago, they have to raise their prices. And that just continues more. Well, when people have to pay more, they need higher wages to get by. And it just is this negative cycle that we're experiencing. So I think that a recession, we're probably already likely in one, and it's just unclear what that is going to look like. I think it will probably be different from previous ones.
I know you recently wrote something about the inflation spike and the lack of workers. Maybe you can unpack that. How do those two relate? And I'm still amazed at the fact that, you know, things are so tough and we're still seeing, you know, a certain labor shortage. Why aren't people going back to work?
Yeah, we have a shortage of about 3 million workers today. There are actually fewer people employed today than there were prior to the pandemic. And that's despite the working age population growing by about 4.4 million. And what happened there is that workers kind of fled the job market thanks to these policy decisions, 18 months of unemployment benefits, other welfare without work incentives. Now we're adding to that with student loan. You know, there was the payment pause that's been going on for years, and now there's the announcement that we're going to cancel $10,000 of your debt. And it makes it easier for people to get by without working. And the problem is it looks like in the data, which I've been pouring through month by month, it's the young workers. It's the 20 to 24 age group. And those are who we need most, you know, to count on for the future of our economy, to be doing productive things, to be gaining education and experience so that they will have good careers in the long term and they will be producing things that we will all benefit from. But sadly, that's been the biggest group of decline.
Yeah, let's do this. Let's grab a couple of calls. I only have my guest today for a few moments. If you want to join Rachel, you want to join me? The number here is 888-914-9149. Rachel Gressler is a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation's Grover M. Herman Center for the Federal Budget. Sandy's in Fond du Lac. She's got a question about federal debt. So this is right up your alley. Sandy, thanks for joining us. You're on the air with Rachel. Go right ahead.
Hey, Sandy's a he. I was named for Sandy Colfax. Anyway.
Hey. Hi, Sandy. Sorry about that, brother.
There was a good article about the difference between a million, a billion, and a trillion in our local paper. Mm. If I owed you $100 and said I'd pay you in a million seconds, it would take 12 days. If I owed that same $100 and said I'd pay you in a billion seconds, it would take 32 years. Wow. And if I owed you $100 and said I'd pay you in a trillion seconds, it would take 32,000 years.
Wow.
That's a little scary, isn't it?
It certainly is.
What's our national debt nowadays?
Rachel, what is it, 30-some trillion? Where are we at now?
Yes, we passed 30 trillion a while ago. We're creeping up there more and more, and that depends on whether or not you include all of our unfunded obligations for Social Security and Medicare, of course, make that larger. But I like your point, Sandy, about putting these things in perspective, because when it's, you know, every other month that we hear Congress is passing a trillion-plus dollar bill, we lose sight of what that actually means. And just the $4.8 trillion that I noted earlier that the Biden administration has added on top of the debt that was already going to occur, that's $37,000 for every household in America. We need to remember to break these things down so that we can fairly evaluate, is all that spending worth it? Does the average household feel like they're $37,000 better because of, you know, the past year and a half of policies? Probably not.
Yeah, Sandy, thank you for your call. Let's talk national debt for a moment. I know you're not a political pundit, but this just is bad policy. You know, all this spending, and you're right, the trillion has become the new billion. And yet, to Sandy's point, if you look at how many more zeros are on that and how fast the interest accrues and how long it takes to pay that back, it's frightening. It really is a very frightening factor. The U.S. national debt right now is $30 trillion. I think it's $887 million. So we're just about $31 trillion right now, if I'm looking at this correctly, in the national debt clock. Two things. How do you think it's going to be with the elections? I think the economy is the number one factor above anything else for a lot of voters. And then two, you know, does the current administration really think that this is good for the country? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I'm no financial expert here, but I can't see how our mounting national debt and our all the other debt that we carry as well can be good for the country. And we're seeing record inflation and numbers that harken us back to 1979. I'd love your take on that, how you read this and what the mindset perhaps behind this or rationale behind it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that the economy is absolutely going to play into the elections this fall, and most people are struggling. You know, their real wages are declining, the debt's rising. We know that taxes are on the horizon, and whether or not that's personal taxes or business taxes, it's impacting things like jobs and the investment that happens that makes all of us more wealthy, more productive in the long run. And so I think the economy is going to be a big issue. I don't think that inflation is going to let up significantly between now and then. I don't think that we're going to see a turnaround in growth or major change in the jobs going forward. And unfortunately, I see the debt is just being used as a political tool, and that politicians can spend future taxpayers' money as a way to get people to elect them again. And the perfect example of that is this recent student loan bailout. I mean, we're talking about sending $10,000 of windfall benefits to the most affluent Americans that have the greatest capacity to have higher incomes over their lifetimes. And who's going to pay for that is blue collar workers. But the ones that are benefiting are the ones that are most likely to vote. And so it's just very disturbing that the debt has been allowed to even reach the point it was prior to the pandemic. But where it is now, and without any consequence and without lawmakers being held to check, because we don't know what will happen. And that's what, you know, the nature of financial crisis is, that they don't just happen slowly over time and give you, you know, the benefit of being able to make modest changes. They often happen abruptly. And then you have to make really drastic cuts that will significantly hurt people.
With the student loan debt thing, I was asking somebody about that. I'm curious. Will it go through? Is the president on good ground? Are we going to see legal challenges to that? Or, I mean, is that a done deal right now?
It's not a completely done deal, no, and we hope it won't be, because the costs are looking like anywhere between $500 billion and $1 trillion. And these are contracts that people legally entered into. But there will be some challenges. The administration's own Department of Education advised them over a year ago that they did not have the authority to do this. Now they've backtracked and they're trying to defend that authority. So it's yet to be seen. But I hope for the American people that this, you know, does not go through.
Yeah, I know they said the number was pretty low initially. And the one number I saw was $600 billion. But if it goes as high as a trillion, whew, that's a lot of money. Hey, Rachel, I'm grateful for your time today and for your insight. If people want to learn more about this, I guess the best place to go is Simply Heritage Foundation. How they follow you or get connected?
Yep, you can go to heritage.org. And we also have our media outlet, thedailysignal.com.
That sounds great. All right, well, I've got to hold it right there. I'm grateful for your time. Got to take a short pause. Stay with me. The final segment of the Drew Mariani Show, straight ahead.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thank you for joining me today. It has been a delight hanging out with you on this great feast of the anniversary of the day the Lord gave the Chapel of Divine Mercy to St. Faustina. If you missed any of the conversation, I just want to give you a quick heads up. Go to relevantradio.com. Go to my podcasts. Do a search for the Drew Mariani Show, where podcasts can be found. And if you enjoy what you hear here, if you like the perspective you get, then please share what you hear here with other people. You know, we're just talking about debt. I know it can be hard. Couple things here, two things I also want to bring to your attention. I just found out that Ken Starr has just died. We should really pray for him, former federal judge, U.S. Solicitor General. He was 76 years of age. He was the prosecutor in the Clinton Whitewater probe. And a lawyer for Trump in the impeachment trial. So God called him home. 76 is young. I mean, it falls in the average demographic. I think the average lifespan of a man in this country is about 73, and for a woman, it's 79. But, you know, when you hear about these stories, you don't know the day or the hour. Also, another friend of this show, just one other bit of news I just found out just moments ago, Peter Pry. Do you know Peter Pry? He used to testify before Congress. He's part of the EMP Commission. He always joined me many times talking about nuclear weapons, the dangers of what an EMP blast could do over our country. He died as well. He died on August 20th. So two men, both called home to God. Peter, I knew personally. And if I had asked, just please remember both their souls. Remember all those that God is calling home. We don't know the day. We don't know the hour. Today could be our day, you know, maybe it's tomorrow. And I pray to God that it's not, you know, I pray that we are always right with God. Pray we never have to see our children go before us, or perhaps our spouse, you know, those are tough things, but very sobering, to say the least. You know, I want to talk just briefly about debt, because I know it can be really stressful. And, you know, we had this person on talking about, the market took a major dive, right? And, of course, the economy. I often feel like we're being gaslighted by the current administration in terms of how great things are. And, you know, you can go through the numbers like I just did. And, you know, we know how difficult things can be. She says, look, you might be bringing home $3,000 more in your paycheck this year, but you're paying $5,100 more in inflation. So, you know, there's a little bit of a deficit there. I saw one stat, and it always struck me. It said that over half of all Americans, over half of them, cannot pay cash for an unexpected $400 expense. And maybe you're in that. Right now, if the tires went on the car, could you buy new tires in cash? Do you have the money set aside? So what happens? People put it on their credit card, and they figure, I'll pay the credit card off. Add up several unexpected expenses, right, with your regular monthly credit spending, and soon you have debt over your head. And that's what's happening. And we're living in a time when things are becoming more expensive people are getting deeper and deeper in the debt. And there have been job layoffs. There's been illness with COVID. You never know when accident's going to affect you. Before you know it, that debt monster, right? It's nipping at your heels. And debt grows. It grows. The average American with credit card debt, I forget what the number is, 16,000, 18,000. It's up there. I mean, you're talking thousands and thousands of dollars. And then add the mortgage, right? Add the car loans, you know, add the other family debt. Maybe you've got two cars, you know, maybe you've got student loans, maybe you've got medical bills. You can see how quickly debt can rise. It just keeps growing. First of all, you know, I think, yeah, it's a money problem, but I also think it could be a spiritual problem. And when we talk numbers, it's easy to say, oh, it's the administration or it's the cost of this. I think debt is intimately, I think it's intricately connected to the spiritual. And I think it's a tool of the evil one, too. I think you can get dragged into the slavery, if you will, to service debt. There's a famous quote, and you probably have heard it a million times. Every financial analyst that I put on the air who's Catholic likes to throw out Proverbs 22:7. And that's one to jot down. Write this down. Proverbs 22:7. You know what it says? It says that the rich rule over the poor and that the borrower is the slave to the lender. The borrower is a slave to the lender. And if you don't think you are a slave to your debt, try missing a few payments, right? See what happens. See how that phone rings. See how you're dunned, right? See how you're harangued. See what happens to your credit. See what happens the next time you try to get a loan. You are a slave, you know, without question, to that lender. You know, in fact, that is something that I remember reading that the scribe Sirach, he talked about in 200 BC. Sirach lived in Jerusalem with all of its trade and travelers, and he realized that a man might buy much for little, he once said, but you'll pay for it seven times over. A man could buy much for little, but you'll pay for it seven times over. Sirach 20, verse 11. You'll love that. It's, when you use debt to, I don't know, fund your lifestyle, and it's easy to do that. You know, your friends want to go out to dinner, right? You need to take that trip. You know, maybe the car's kind of beat. You want the new one or whatever, the furniture, you know, whatever it might be. We all have these things. You need the new grill, whatever. Well, you can find yourself very easily funding your lifestyle. And you think, well, look, I'm getting it on sale. It's a great deal. It's the end of the season, right? Yeah, I'm going to put it on my credit card for a minute, but man, I'm going to save a lot of money, right? You're going to pay for something seven times over. That's what Sirach said 1,000 years ago. Imagine if he was alive today, you know, what kind of wisdom he'd have. My wife often would say when she came home, and I always tease her about it. She'd be like, oh, she'd come back from the store. Guess how much money I saved you today? And I'm like, saved me, right? Oh, yeah, I got this on sale. You're not saving me anything, right? No, it's part of it's all how you look at it. She says that to tease me. She likes to, you know, to twist the knife a little bit. I saved you a lot of money today. I'm like, uh-oh, where were you shopping? Right. I don't want to paint her in a bad light. She doesn't do that often, but it's, and she's very good. She'd get mad if I was talking about her right now, but, you know, the bottom line is it's perspective. Did she save me money? Yeah, I guess in some respects she did. Or did you spend money that now has to be paid back? You know, the other thing about debt, which is so weird, I think it can make people feel isolated and embarrassed and alone. Some people feel compelled to hide a debt problem, right? They don't want to admit, maybe they don't fully understand it. I have a friend who's like this. He says to me, Drew, I'm terrible with my finances. I always have been. I don't know how to manage money. I don't. And he's never had anything. He's in debt his entire life. And my heart goes out to him. I said, you should talk to somebody. You can get out of it. Maggie had worked for Dave Ramsey. And Maggie, right? You were with the Ramsey organization for a while. I'm sure a lot of people came in over their head in debt. I'm sure Dave has given them advice that, you know, told them they can get out. So no matter how deep your debt is, what advice did he give in terms of telling people who feel like, hey, it's been this way my entire life. I can't get out. What gems did he give to them, to his listeners?
You know, I heard a lot from people who ended up able to change their habits and their mindset. And they would come and thank him and they'd say, oh, Dave, you helped us get out of debt. And he'd say, I really didn't do anything. You did it. So the thing is, in teaching people and educating them You have to give them the keys to their freedom. He gave a couple solid steps of just like, you know, get $1,000 in your savings first. Make sure you have that. Sell whatever you need to just get $1,000 of cushion. And then you're going to go ballistic and you're going to pay off all of your debt from smallest to biggest. And people go, that's crazy, because wouldn't you want to attack the biggest debt first? Well, it's not all about the numbers. There's human psychology involved and motivation and emotion. So when you get a small win, it builds up. So, you know, there's all these kinds of things. And I just loved seeing the average everyday person winning when they would come to visit.
I love it. Yeah, you can do it. It seems impossible. You might be listening to me now saying, Drew, you don't know how bad my dad is. It's a mindset. It's a spiritual thing, too. It's also a mathematic thing. But we live in a culture that has you believing that true happiness comes in what you buy. You have to have the latest, greatest. That's not true. Remember what the Lord told in Luke 12, 21, where he gave that parable about the man who had rich harvest and he stored all these things? You don't take it with you. Right? Dude, your treasure's where your heart is. You know, remember that. I've got to go. I'm out of time. I'll be back tomorrow. Till then, God bless.